Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. We're doing our usual walk through the Welsh Hills today. And on the way up the hill, we decided we'd start a new series called Interesting Times, because times are certainly very interesting right now. So we thought we'd kick off with talking about what I consider to be a pretty historic event that happened in Bristol a couple of days ago, where protesters who were supporting the Black Lives Matter movement pulled down a statue of Edward Colston, a 17th century slave trader. Apparently they spent about 20 years politely writing to the council to try and get rid of this, but of course nothing ever happened. But it was quite a thing to watch. It really was quite moving, actually. They tied ropes to his neck and literally pulled it down. And then they all jumped on it, and there's lots of photographs of them kneeling on its neck. And then there's a film of them rolling it down the road with sort of paint splatters all over its throat, and then down to the harbour and dumping it in the water. I have never seen anything like that happen in Britain before. It was very moving. And a fantastic symbol for the whole movement, really. But this sort of thing is happening all over the world at the moment. It almost seems like I hope I'm not jumping the gun by saying this, but a global revolution. So what do you think about the events in Bristol? How significant are they to this movement, future possibilities?
I think it's very significant for a number of reasons, really. Firstly, there's a skirmish in the semiological warfare. In other words, the struggle over science in the public domain. But it's really pretty good.
That's so potent.
It's very potent, yeah. But of course, it's partly potent because it's resonance with images of statues of Lenin being pulled down after the demise of the Soviet Union.
It's like when statues start being pulled down, like, you know, shit is real, you know.
And when Saddam Hussein was deposed, his huge monumental statues of him were pulled down by the Iraqis. And when the Eastern Bloc countries protested themselves free of Soviet domination, there was a lot of this similar event whereby a rope would be tied around the statue and a load of people would pull and then just topple it. And there have been similar statue topplings in the US, particularly in the Deep South, where Confederate generals and so forth were memorialised early in the 20th century or late in the late 19th century in southern cities as a kind of a Confederate sort of fuck you to the the United States. And there have been similar incidents over there where these statues have been pulled down. This particular statue of Colston was put up to commemorate and honour the man as a great citizen of Bristol. And he did make an enormous amount of money out of the slave trade. We have various figures, but it seems that he transported hundreds of thousands of slaves across the Atlantic from West Africa to the Caribbean. He had holdings in sugar, which of course was a slave crop. But he also donated money to Bristol, and there are schools named after him and streets named after him and so forth.
Oh, didn't they go around afterwards and change the street names as well?
Some street names have been changed over the years. There's been a lot of awareness of the significance of this statue. I think Bristol's got about a 12% BAME minority. It's a very multi-ethnic city. Well, I actually spent a bit of time there. I've done some teaching there. I've played music there on a couple of occasions and stayed there a bit.
must be pretty shit as a black person to have to yeah. look at the statue to
yeah.
a slave trader, like so they on yeah. work every on
well,
the
there have been there have been campaigns going on for 20 years at least to try and get it removed, or at least for the plaque to be changed on it, because the plaque had the message that he was a great philanthropist, yeah. and not mentioning how he got his money. And people are trotting this argument out now from the right and Tory MPs and stuff. Oh, he's got a statue because he was a philanthropist. And I can just say it straight out. I think it's absolutely bloody marvellous that the people took back control, eh?
Yeah.
And pulled yeah. the fucking thing down.
Yeah.
And
it was like all sorts of people as well. It
oh, yeah.
was like a real mixture of people all involved
well,
in that.
Of course it was. Of course it was, you know, yeah.
And the police just stood by and let it happen, which I thought was yeah. great as well.
Yeah. Now, whether there'll be any prosecutions will be interesting. And you've got people like Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, coming out and saying it's disgraceful, you know, vandalism. And they on the Radio 4 this morning, they wheeled out Kit Malthouse, who's a minister for policing and public order, that kind of stuff. And he said that this is wrong because it's a breach of the law. And I tweeted Radio 4, hashtag Radio 4 Today programme straight away, said, well, this kind of presumes that laws are always good, never cruel, never stupid, never unjust. This presumes that, and this is, after all, a victimless crime. You know, so
probably saved the council some money in the end, because they were going to have yeah. to take it down at some
I mean,
point.
It'll be interesting. I mean, the fucking idiot. This is the kind of semiotic war, ideological war that we're having. It's between people who are saying, you never, ever, ever disobey the law. Just carry on being obedient little clones. Well, of course they want that, because what they definitely don't want is people rising up. And they've got loads and loads of laws in place for circumscribing protest and direct action, civil disobedience. And I don't think the law is fucking sacrosanct. And anyway, Dominic Cummins has told us that, you know, the law is not evenly applied. The Prime Minister has backed him up on that and said the law needn't be evenly applied. One Tory parliamentarian whose name escapes me actually said, Dominic Cummins is a very important person, therefore he should be allowed some leeway. And, you know, and there are some people who are special and the rules apply differently. One of them actually said it. One of the, I mean, they're quite clever, some of these Tory wallers, but none of them are intelligent. Yeah. And hardly any of them, and this applies to Cummins particularly, have got any kind of sense of when to keep their mouth shut, you know, to promote their own case.
They do dig their own holes a lot of the time.
They're doing that. Well, they are kind of, for the most part, as I say, not particularly intelligent. Clever, but not intelligent. So if that's the case, it's perfectly legitimate to pull down an absolutely noxious statue that celebrates a noxious philosophy.
The worst thing a human being can do to another human being.
Yeah.
That's what that statue was celebrating yeah. there.
Well, apparently of the many 200,000 slaves that he transported, or some figure in that order, that 19,000, 20,000 of them were thrown into the Atlantic Ocean in shackles.
Yeah, that's just the significance of rolling him into the water.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's not only is it excusable, pulling it down is a moral imperative. For right-thinking people and right-feeling people.
Giving the perfect execution of what happened, I think they've been planning this for a while, actually.
They must have had to think about it, yeah. But yeah, probably, and why not? All power to whoever did it, well done. That's my thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I do employ the opposite argument sometimes, you know. I mean, I'm saying, well, it's semiological warfare. And it is a war. It is a war. And, you know, there is a battle over the signs, and let's get a really, really good fucking victory under our belts, you know, and the good people of Bristol, the good youth of Bristol, by the look of it, did us that favour. And, now, I mean, do you imagine now that the council is going to, or the army or Boris or somebody's going to go and get that statue out of the harbour at Bristol and put it back on the fucking plinth. Seriously, are they going to do that? I mean, it's such a masterstroke that them doing that would absolutely so fucking damaging, you know?
Oh, it would, yeah.
Well, so polarising, really. I mean, it is a polarising move. You've got people like Nigel Farage going on Twitter and talking about our way of life, you know, and this is the new Taliban. And he got his knickers in a twist this morning because he got a photograph of a black young person of indeterminate gender flicking a lighter underneath a Union Jack. And that really, I mean, almost give the bloke
a heart attack.
Yeah, I mean, his blood pressure, you know, steam coming out of his ears. And of course, I took the opposite approach here. I said, well, you know, you're just obsessed with symbols. You just fetishise symbolic objects. You know, you need treatment, man, you know.
Yeah.
And then concluding saying, it's just a piece of rag, for fuck's sake. Well, of course, it's just a stupid statue, for fuck's sake. Don't get your knickers in a twist, it's just a stupid statue. But at the same time, you know, that's kind of debunking its semiology. I mean, we have a terrible problem that people live in symbols, in a world of symbols. And they can be motivated to murder by symbols. This is really, really daft. Best use of symbols is to use them to approach what they symbolise. You know, a mandala symbolises like the, you know, the transcendent wholeness at the centre of the psyche and blah, blah. So we use it to get there. We don't fall in love with the telephone. We listen to the message, you know. And as I said, I tweeted Farage, I said, the trouble is with living in symbols like this, is that you're missing out on real life, which is so much more. Real life's just raw, pre-symbolic, you know, life as we live here. There's another point that the people who are complaining about the demise of the statue of Edward Colston make. And that point is that this is our history. And whether it's pretty or dark, you know, it's our history and we're erasing history. This is actually a bunkum point. The statue doesn't teach us any history. You know, the demise of the statue is teaching us some history.
Yeah, it has a whole new history now, that statue.
Yeah, but what statues do is they celebrate, they act as remembrance and they're celebratory. And that's all that they do. If you want to learn history, you go and read books. You watch good presentations on YouTube by solid historians. If you want to learn history, that's what you do. This is not erasing the history. I mean, ideally, what would happen to the statue is that it would be taken down and put in the Bristol Museum with a load of other exhibits that tell the story of the slave trade and Bristol's role in it. Bristol is a very rich city still, rolling on from that slave trade. And that would be the statue playing a role in history. But just standing there in the street, it doesn't. It's just actually the mayor of Bristol came on the radio this morning. He's a Jamaican heritage guy. You know, he's the first black elected mayor in the UK. They have an elected mayor in Bristol. And he said, well, it's a personal affront to me every time I walk past it, because I know what it means and I know who he was. And I know how much human misery his wealth cost. But nevertheless, you know, he still didn't want to do the thing. And how could he, as the mayor of Bristol, say, well, I applaud law-breaking? He can't, can he, in his position?
Bit of a tricky spot.
It is a tricky spot for political leaders, but you know, the people on the street, the street movements, they're the people, you know, and they are actually only subject to the government to the extent that the government can get away with it. When push comes to shove, and it makes you realise, you know, all politics is ultimately about controlling the mobile vulgaris, the great shifting mass of people, because if they rise up, they do what they did in Versailles in 1789, when the women of Paris went to Versailles and fetched the king and the queen and took them back to Paris in a carriage and put them in jail. And then when the time came, they took them out into the centre of the town and chopped their heads off. So at the back of all politics is a lurking fear of the mob. And I don't use the mob as a pejorative as it's used now. It's just a shortened term, the Latin term, the mobile vulgaris, you know. The great moving mass of ordinary people, which sometimes can be roused, and it is roused. It's roused globally. It's very, very significant. Very, very significant.
How close do you think we are to a Versailles moment?
I don't know. It'll be partly down to who wins the semiological war and who wins the ideological war, and to what extent armies and police forces rebel against the request of government to fire on its own people. A lot always hinges on that. It's interesting in this context.
And also how much the media support them or not, how much they lie on their behalf.
Yeah, well, it's already happening, you know, the lies are being told. Darren Grimes, who's a little boy right-wing commentator, he was mixed up with B-Leave, which was like this wing of the Vote Leave campaign at the time of the Brexit shenanigans. He goes on Twitter and saying how disgusting that the protesters pulled the police woman off her horse, and then there's the movie of it. The police woman collided with a traffic light and was knocked off the horse. Nobody was anywhere near the horse. It was going too fast for anybody to jump up and pull her off it. But he puts immediately onto Twitter, she was pulled off the horse by the protesters. Not true. Patently not true. The thing was filmed from about five different angles.
Yeah.
It's not true. Even the police announced that the person, it's a policewoman, fell from the horse. You know, they'll be doing this all the way along. There's a massive propaganda effort to turn this into wanton vandalism, anarchy, interfering with our symbols, our cherished symbols. And all this kind of stuff, there's a huge thing. But of course, you know, the thing itself was a huge semiotic victory, or semiological victory, because it's so hard to reply. Because you start defending the statue being there, and you're automatically defending the worst kind of fucking racism, brutal slavery, chattel slavery, you know. And a lot of the racism that's rolled down the ages since the emancipation of the American slaves in the 1865, Britain went a bit earlier in abolishing slavery. But it's rolled on down the ages. The consequences of it are still rolling on. And the Black Lives Matter issue is a consequence of that institutionalised chattel slavery of the 19th, you know, that didn't ceased to be until the 19th century. In fact, it's illegal worldwide. All states pretty well have signed international agreements to outlaw slavery, but it does still in fact happen. There's slave markets in Libya. After the Americans bombed it back into the Stone Age, it went really full chaotic brutality, you know, with open slave markets. So All that, you know, it's for semiology, it's brilliant, because if Priti Patel can stand up and decry it, say it's absolutely disgraceful, she's defending slavery.
Well, John, the more conservatives who can just make idiots of themselves doing that, the better really.
Yeah, that is its beauty as a semiotic victory, or a semiological victory. These two words are interchangeable, by the way. Is that any reply to it automatically self-defeats, you know, and the gammons are absolutely apoplectic as a result, you know, Farage and Tommy Robinson, so-called, Stephen actually Lennon, he's basically going to have a stroke unless he can get his blood pressure down, just ranting and raving across social media about our symbols and our way of life and all these complete
bollocks. I wonder how much bollocks. Power the gammons actually have. I mean, there's been all these protests, but I haven't seen any gammons trying to fight against the protesters.
But in the UK there has been some
Aren't they meant to be doing their own march soon, where about five people will turn up if
Well, let's say on, let's say on Saturday, but they're not averse to throwing bricks at the police. Mm. When they had the Free Tommy March or something, they were throwing bricks and stick, you know, staves and things at the police, you know.
What's their march about?
It'll be about our way of life and our symbols and all this bollocks, you know.
Right.
That's what it'll be about. It'll be about.
I'll be willing to bet you anything they don't get many. It's like the Brexiteers. When they got their chance to actually do their marches, there was hardly anyone there. It was when Brexit didn't actually happen last October.
Yeah.
And there was this forecasted epic demonstration by the Brexiteers saying, we've got to do it because the Brexiteers will be out in force and all this sort of stuff. And it was like built up as this massive thing. And then when it did actually happen, there was probably, about sort of 20 people standing around really not knowing what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pathetic. There was no passion, really. There was nothing.
No. Whereas this thing, it's full of fire and passion, you know. Because it's about social injustice, yeah. Real fucking injustice. Real desperate, violent injustice. It's been rolling on for hundreds of years, you know. And at the end of the day, a lot of the young people are pretty astute, in my experience, you know. And now it's about capitalism and the 1%, you know, or the 0.1%, and their hegemonic dominance of the planet and the way the gross inequalities of the system determine our lives and our life chances. And they've had enough, and I don't blame them. But you asked, didn't you, say, well, you know, is it a revolutionary moment? I think it probably is, but there's a lot can go wrong as well. I do think that the right are fighting really hard.
What kind of tactics do you think they'll use to try and either divert this movement for their own ends or stop it completely?
Divide and rule. If necessary, clamp down. Under the guise of the special powers they've got because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Remember, Boris Johnson has got unlimited power.
Yeah.
To just kind of decide that something's the law. You know?
Yeah, that's a bit shit, really.
You know, so that's already in place. Yeah. And they can use it as an excuse to do an absolute draconian paramilitary clampdown.
Yeah.
Using the military and the police.
That still relies on the military and the police being willing to do the evil.
Yeah. Now, they may in this country do that. In the US, the top military bod sent a memo to all of the chiefs of staff of like the Marine Corps, the Air Force, the various branches of the Army, the US Navy and all the rest of it, saying, I want to remind you that your constitutional duty is to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution says that people have got the free right of assembly and protest, peaceful protest, that's in the Constitution. And therefore the Army cannot be used to stop such events, you know, and the president can't order it, and the National Guard comes under the command of the governors of the states, not the president. So the top military guy in America sends a memo around to all of the top chiefs of the military saying that.
I mean, that's pretty momentous. That was like the ace that Trump had, was that he was going to inflict the military on the people, and he hasn't got it anymore.
The military have turned around and said, well, hang on, we defend the Constitution. And then the other thing, of course, is that Minneapolis City Council, by a majority vote, which goes past the kind of veto mark, so it's a mandatory vote, have decided to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department and, in consultation with the people, figure out a new way and a more fit-for-purpose way of peacekeeping.
Again, which is an absolutely astonishing event, and I don't know if that's happened before.
It's utterly momentous, you know.
It's
Tory.
Yeah, our Tory ministers are all kind of doubling down and digging down and saying it's scandalous, it's vandalism, because one statue at the end of the day is just a piece of tin. But semiotically is important.
Yeah.
Because it represents a celebration of the worst kind of oppression.
Yeah.
And
this is great, because they're going to be forced to just defend slavery if they keep trying to say it was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, but you see, Johnson goes on social media today in this context saying, oh, well, the right to peaceful protest is, of course, we will defend it, you know. They're making all the right liberal noises about that. And then saying, but any violence, we'll bloody clamp down on it. So...
He's just following Trump, isn't he?
And sometimes the violence is started by the police. What were the police doing? Kitted out in Kevlar jackets with 3-foot clubs, riding big kind of hunting horses down on a crowd of unarmed civilians. And then when one falls off, that's the violence of the crowd.
Apparently some of the horses got injured. But whose fault is that? Police should not be taking horses into these sort of situations.
Why are they doing that? Well, it's intimidation, isn't it? Because, somebody riding fast at you on a big horse like that, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, but we shouldn't be blaming the protesters if the horses get injured.
No. It's down to the fucking government at the end of the day. Book stops with them.
Yeah.
And also agent provocateurs, and this is well documented, this ain't fucking tinfoil hat territory, do infiltrate these groups and go and break a load of windows in order to get the government to then clamp down hard. You know, this is a known tactic. It's well known and it's documented. And all that's going on as well. But there's 60 million people in Britain, you know, probably 30 million of them. Million of them are pretty hopping mad now, and if they all decided to take to the streets, what's going to stop them? Short of a nuke, nothing.
No.
They fear the mob in that beautiful sense of the word mob, you know. But they'll do everything they can to squash it. I mean, we have the example of the Arab Spring, and so I think particularly the sublime moment of Tahrir Square in Egypt, when everybody was on the streets, and Mubarak, the president, did resign and leave the country under public pressure. But the position in Egypt today is, because that wasn't followed through in any kind of rational and tactical way and strategic way, because it was just a spontaneous outpouring of public protest and altruism and the desire to build a new society. It was a true revolution for a short few weeks. But now, the army is back in power. It's martial law. They've got a kind of right-wing fascist president. And it all went pear-shaped because they didn't push the last bit. Similar thing. The wonderful Occupy movement. But because it was leaderless, which is fair enough, we do need to experiment with these leaderless movements. But, and it made its point, it was a sublime moment, but Wall Street's still in charge. You know, Wall Street has just received trillions and trillions of dollars printed by the US government because of a contraction in the economy caused by a virus. Whilst Joe Public is wondering where his next kind of food grocery shopping's going to come from. So they're still won. Now, there's an interesting character called Lawrence Wilkerson, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who I've been sort of following on and off for some time. He comes on YouTube and does little talks and gets interviewed. He was Colin Powell's right-hand man. He's like chief of staff or something like that. Military man all his life, you know, and then in government serving the military wing of the US government. Under a Republican, a lifelong Republican, Bush's presidency. And he's so critical of the current regime, you know. And he said the next thing that's likely to happen is we're going to get another Occupy-style movement, but with some strong, charismatic leaders. And he said if that happens, things are going to go two ways, one of two ways. Either The United States system completely voluntarily rejigs itself. Yeah, in a much more egalitarian direction. Or billionaires will be dragged from their mansions and shot. So this is a guy, right? A lifelong Republican, a militarist, and yet his criticism of the system is such that he issues warnings like that. And I think you've got to take that really seriously. He's been right at the heart of government.
Yeah.
For quite a long time. When they say that, you think, well, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
You know. Oh. So, but I think his analysis is correct. You know, it's. I mean, I'm somebody who's very, very cagey about traditional leadership, because it leads to Stalinism, Nazism. You know, and the old kind of strongman ethos that the right plays to. This is why we've got Bolsonaro. It's why we've got Trump. None of these strong men are actually strong, you know. They're actually like pussies, really, but they're now here to puff their chest out. Mm. And, you know, what's the arsehole in Hungary, you know, or Orban and all these people. And that is a danger with this kind of traditional leadership idea. But at the same time, Tahrir Square, the Arab Spring, failed everywhere except Tunisia, where they got what they wanted. It failed terribly in Syria, which has had like a decade or so of the most horrible civil war, leading to famine, millions of refugees, epidemics, and the whole thing turned into a proxy war between the big powers. And you know, there is something to be said for them going wrong, because there was no follow through of the spontaneous moment, the sublime moment, as Zizek calls it. You know, he says we have to ask ourselves, what about the day after?
So what do you think would be the best way to follow through from the sublime moment?
That's a really tricky question, because there's a sense in which nobody knows.
You know. I suppose things are shifting so quickly.
Yeah.
It's difficult to tell right now. Yeah. I mean, I don't suppose we're at the sublime moment yet.
Well, I think was a sublime moment.
Yeah,
it was
but, a I mean, sublime. But this is so much bigger. I think maybe there'd be a global sublime moment.
It is. It's global. I mean, the Arab Spring went across the Arab world, but this has gone across the world. You know, and even in third world countries, people are demonstrating in solidarity with the American movement. And it's like if the hegemon goes, everything else will go. You know? If the power structure of the United States falters now, which it's doing, Bolsonaro will go, Orban will go. You know, and these right-wing dictators have been installed in numerous countries around the world do depend on US support. By the same token, the blockading of Venezuela and Cuba will become impotent, and those countries will flourish. It's very, very complicated. There's so many factors. I mean, just thinking in the UK, of course, we've got Brexit hurtling down the pike. We're having COVID pandemic. We've got Brexit coming hard on the heels, and that is a second tsunami. And then following that, global warming, which is bigger than all the rest of the crises put together. I mean, there are a number of things which are very interesting that are going on. I mean, Lenin had a theory of revolutions, and he's somebody who actually managed to prosecute a successful revolution. Okay, you can argue it went pear-shaped after, and I would probably argue that. But at least they got it off the ground. They transformed the power structure of their society. And Lenin said the first thing you need is a newspaper all across the country that puts out your stuff, because we've got the internet, we've got the worldwide internet. Now the internet is a site of struggle. But what has happened with the series of catastrophic events that have gone on in 2020 is that each one has revealed, it's acted like a laser, it's revealed features of our situation, and on many levels, economic level, cultural level, ecological level. It's thrown things into sharp relief. Dominic Cummins threw into sharp relief that it's one law for the rich and another law for the poor. This protest against the killing of a black man by white police in Minneapolis has thrown into sharp relief what exactly is the role of the police. Protect and serve? Not really. Its job is to act as the coercive and violent wing of the state to keep the mob under control. That has become apparent. Pulling down of this statue in Bristol, it's brought into very sharp relief and sharp light the nature of symbols, the possibility of direct action by the people on the streets. But as to what will, you know, you can be damn sure that the right will try and sabotage the whole kind of movement. The government will play divide and rule. I think knowledge is very useful. If you need to understand how your enemy's strategies work, what the strategies and tactics are. Biggest one, divide and rule, and we spoke about this on another podcast, you know, putting all of these events in the context of class antagonism. Understanding, knowledge, dissemination of knowledge, fighting the semiological war, fighting the street battles if we have to. Organising globally, doing sort of a quick, dramatic organisation, but also doing slow, steady, building up of a progressive international. Working out actual economic policies that could be put into place to radically transform the world. And I think the 2017 Labour Party manifesto wouldn't have been a bad start. You know? You need to start a little bit slowly, but it would have been a good start, and with a little bit of success under its belt, things could have been taken much further. Of course, that was sabotaged, and it was sabotaged from inside the Labour Party by the right wing of the Labour Party. And the Labour Party and the Conservative Party are both parties of the status quo. Both of them. Except Labour will say, well, we have to give the plebs some crumbs from the table. And the Tories say, let's exploit the plebs as much as we can get away with. That's the only difference between the two parties. The one tries to have a bit of a human face. So that was sabotage. That effort was sabotage from within. Bernie Sanders was sabotage from within the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party in the US two-party system. Again, the difference is very similar. But they are both parties of the status quo. People need to realise that just fighting this on getting some reforms in police departments isn't the true import of what's going on here. The true import of what's going on here and what is revealed is that the system itself needs to be completely and totally upended and replaced and rebuilt from the ground up by something by the people and something for the people.
Okay, so I hope everyone found that interesting, and we will join you again for another interesting times.
Thanks for listening. Make knowledge great again. Wash your hands.